Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Newsnight. We're live from our studios at Kokomlimle in the crowd. The bulletin is also live on Love 99.5 FM in Kumasi and on over 30 affiliates across the country. Well, tonight, as concerns deepen over this year's WASI performance, one of the country's top national teacher unions, NAGRAD, blames the sharp decline in pass rates to reduce contact hours under the free senior high school policy.
This intermittent breaking of school, going home and coming back, is affecting that what we call the learning regime. So this affects students' performance. Number two, it is not every home.
We hear from the Ghana Education Service, which insists the examination outcomes reflect students' academic performance.
Also tonight, Chief Justice begins consideration of 10 petitions for the removal of EC chairs, including Jean Mensah and two others, as government forwards all petitions.
The program has indeed received the referenced petitions in respect of the electoral commissioner and her deputies, and then the special prosecutor.
We also have details of another set of petitions calling for the removal of the special prosecutor that is also being considered by the Chief Justice.
Looking at, tell me one person who has been able to prosecute successfully. Is, I know in my petition I said demonstrated bad faith.
Also tonight, Health Minister raises questions about government's agreement with Zipline as he reveals the drones delivered non-critical supplies like condoms, exercise books and school uniforms during the erstwhile administration.
Some of the items, they fly. Items like condom, blood donor cards, mosquito nets, food and nutrition items, adhesive tapes, syringes and needles, education materials.
We have more as he says government is engaging Zipline over value for money as Ghana pays over $500,000 monthly for drone services in business.
Oil marketing companies justify the expected increase in prices of petroleum products at the pumps.
In sports,
Midiama remain focused on Ghana Premier League title quest despite late draw against rivals Asante Kotoko.
Also coming up tonight, we'll take you to a Woyen Cram Park Room, where a 180-unit modern resettlement community designed for families in the lithium concession remains only on paper, stalled by Parliament's delay in ratifying the mining lease.
They came to demarcate our buildings and told us we would be relocated.
We even used some of the roofing sheet to put up a small pen for our livestock. All of this shows we genuinely plan to expand our home.
We've got the latest of these and many other stories coming up in the next 1 hour. You can be a part of this show by sending us a WhatsApp on 055-1111-997. My name is Kenneth Jesse.
And my name is Pia Lufuri.
Details after this. Welcome back to Newsnight. Let's begin on the education front, because tonight, as conversations intensify around this year's WASI performance, the National Association of Graduate Teachers is blaming the limited contact hours under the free senior high school policy for the poor outcomes. Well, this year's results recorded a significant downturn. Nearly 6,295 candidates had their results cancelled, and an additional 1,066 candidates remain under investigation for suspected offences. Well, the broader national picture shows troubling trends.
Well, more than half of the candidates who sat for the exam scored between D7 and 5.9 in core mathematics, the lowest performance in the subject in 4 years. In an interview with Joy News, President of the National Association of Graduate Teachers, NAGRAT, Angel Kabunu, said the outcomes reflect the actual performance levels produced under the current structure.
This intermittent breaking of school, going home and coming back, it's affecting that what we call the learning regime. So this affects students' performance. Number two, it is not every home that is conducive for learning. Yes, there are homes that you go, you may have your own room to yourself, but a mass majority of our students don't have such homes. In fact, the distractions at home are enormous. And all these things, together with a lot of other factors, affect students' performance. And let me say that this WAIEC Resolve 2025 is the true reflection of the actual performance of our students.
And let's expand this conversation. We have on the phone lines Andrew Kabunu, the president of NAGRAD, whose voice you just heard. Also, Kofi Asari is the executive director of Africa Education Watch. But we'll first start with Andrew Kabunu. Good evening and thank you for your time here on Newsnight. Now, you have attributed the performance to limited contact hours. Tell us more about that. How did that impact the WASI results we just saw?
Well, like I was saying, a school term is supposed to be definite. So are for parents and children to be able to plan and fight themselves for school. So when we have a definite timetable that says schools reopen in September and schools go down in December, the parent knows, the child knows, the teacher knows, the school knows that this is going to be our school term. But when we have the situation we have now, where Form 1 students go to school, Form 2 students will be at home, all Form 3 students will have to come. Sometimes people went to school for as low as 2 weeks and had to break for others to come. There's one thing, when students go home and return to school, they don't immediately get into the academic frame. It takes a number of days to shed off the drudgery of all the excitement of the home to get yourself into the school frame of work. So this uncertainty that our children have been going through may have contributed largely to the type of outcome that we are looking at. The next thing I'd like to talk about is the fact that it is not every parent and every home that is created conducive for learning to take place. There are homes where the distraction and the external influences affect education negatively. That is why the boarding system is so popular in our country, and our parents crave for it because they know the type of home environment the child comes from. And let me say, this result is the true reflection of the program we are running. Let us not chide ourselves. This is the true reflection of the performance of the student.
You've talked about this being the true reflection of the performance of the students, but beyond that, are there other factors that contributed to the decline?
Yes. Like I said, we have tried to provide education for everybody, which is good. But we have not created the commensurate infrastructure to match up with the numbers that we are talking about. Again, the interesting thing about this country is that we have some 80 or so schools that every parent or child wants to send his or her child to. So we have not even lifted the infrastructure in most other schools that currently are underserved in terms of numbers of students. If we want to talk about number of secondary schools, we have enough secondary schools in this country to accommodate comfortably all our children if our children are equitably distributed. But because of this preference, so the preferred schools have gotten choked, the despised schools are in need of students, the environment is not exciting, children are not motivated to learn, And where the environment is such that we have the children who may be motivated to learn, we have overcrowding. We need to take steps to equitably distribute students in school by providing the needed infrastructure. Then we should stop this grade A, category A, category B, category C thing that we are doing. It's a reflection of our inept approach to providing resources to all schools equally.
And Mr. Kabonom, my final question to you will be, the GS has released a statement, and in that statement it says that it will fully transition to the international WASI that is written by West African member countries in May, June 2026. I'm just asking your thoughts on that. You think it's the right way to go?
Well, that exam is not too different from the one we are writing. I mean, the standards are the same. There's nothing different about it.
Andrew Kabonu, President of NAGRA, thank you so much for your time here on Newsnight.
Thank you very much.
Well, let's bring in Kofi Asare, who is the Executive Director for Africa Education Watch. Glad you could join us this evening. You've been listening to Angel Kabonu from NAGRA. He's been attributing the results that have, we have been seeing this year to the reduced contact hours by the students. Do you agree with him?
Well, he's a teacher. He's talking from experience, I surmise. So it will be difficult not to agree with him to that extent. But it is also important to avert our minds to the fact that poor preparation could have occasioned this result. Poor preparation in the sense that you get a feeling that in many schools, especially the least endowed schools, people were not adequately prepared, especially for math. And this is not a general failure. These are two subject-specific dips which are very, very concerning. And that's why I'm saying that it's lack of poor preparation towards these subjects. But for now, we can only wait for the chief examiner's report, which should be out by the end of the month. It is only when that report is out that the GAS will be able to analyze, ascertain where the gaps were, and on the basis of that, intervene in those areas to ensure that the right contributions take place ahead of the June 2026.
And while we wait for that result, from your experience as an educationist, what measures do you think we need to put in place to avert such results from repeating itself, for example, next year?
Three things. First, we need to continue to strengthen in regulation and supervision to continue to improve the credibility of our results. I want to encourage the Ministry of Education to continue its stance that invigilators who are caught colluding will be dismissed from the service. Second, I want to encourage the GAS to continue to hold masters to account for examination of practice that occurs in their schools. It is important for parents to talk to their wards and let them understand that while preparing for June 2026, they should prepare as independent candidates and not hope to rely on anyone, because the systems being put in place are so stringent that if you, as part of preparation, assume that you're going to have any support from a teacher or an educator, you might be found wanting. And finally, and most importantly, after reviewing the chief examiner's report, it's important for the GAS to strengthen the ongoing interventions and motivate the teachers to put up their best, because we appreciate that given the limited days the children will spend in school, it's important that the teachers maximize contact hours and work extra. So motivation for me is very, very important.
Okay, Kofi Asare, thank you very much. That's the Executive Director for Africa Education Watch. Well, some of the candidates have been speaking to Joy News, and they say that although they prepared adequately for the exams, the questions were beyond their expectations.
With the social studies, the thing was that was our first written paper. So there was some kind of tension and pressure when we were about to write it.
Core math was difficult, I won't lie. We have been solving past questions, but still, the core math, I haven't even seen it before.
So nobody really thought that like core math questions would turn out that way in this WASI that we wrote. So the way we were actually taught was to be strategic in how to solving, diagram questions, how to be solving word problem questions and all that. So we didn't really bang much of our efforts and hopes on how like word problem per se, because if I'm to remember correctly, the commas that we wrote from question 1 to question 5 was all word problem. Like,
the topics we were given by WAEC to study for the exam, when the day for the exam arrived and we sat for the exam, the topics we were given appeared on the question paper.
The WAEC 2025 was quite interesting and shocking. Shocking in a way that a subject like maths per se, how we the students wrote the exams is not how we have seen the results. Because although the maths were difficult, but we the students did something. We wrote something per se. But when the results came, most students got F9, F9, and E8.
Well, early on the Super Morning Show, Head of Public Affairs at WAEC, John Kapi, said that the chief examiner identified 7 persistent weaknesses across core areas of the syllabus, which he believes significantly affected national outcomes.
Obviously, these are not topics that are outside the syllabus, and they're not outside the test blueprint. So from the general comment that was made, the chief examiner reported that the standard of the paper compared favorably with that of the previous years.
For purposes of emphasis, can you repeat the 7 weaknesses that the chief examiner identified?
So 1, representing mathematical information in a diagram. 2, solving global mathematics-related problems. 3, constructing cumulative frequency table from given data distribution. 4, making deductions from real-life problems. 5, solving application problems in simple interest. 6, translating word problems into mathematical expressions. And 7, interpreting of results from cumulative frequency curves.
Right, so, Pearl, that's John Kapi there. It's quite interesting how, when I heard the results, especially the social studies of 1 in 4 failing social studies, because back in the day,
it was easier
for you. You didn't really have to study for social studies.
Well, some have to study.
Interesting. Anyway, let's hear from you. If you are a candidate, if your ward wrote WASI this year, let's hear from you what the experience was like. The telephone number to send your message to is 055-1111-997. Away from education, though, the Chief Justice has begun considering a raft of high-stakes petitions seeking the removal of Ghana's top election officials, a process that places EC Chairperson Jean Mensah and her 2 deputies under intense scrutiny. Ojo News can confirm that President John Mahama has transmitted 10 separate petitions to Chief Justice Paul Bafoboni. Of these petitions, 7 call for the removal of the EC chair and her deputies, Dr. Bosman Asare, in charge of corporate services, and Samuel Tete, in charge of operations. And the remaining 3 target the special prosecutor, Kisiye Jabin, with petitioners citing various breaches and concerns.
Well, the Chief Justice will now determine whether a prima facie case exists to trigger a full inquiry. My colleague Michael Ashali joins us in the studio with details of the constitutional processes expected to be followed in this case. Michael, let's start with the removal process of the heads of the EC. What does the law say on this?
So this will largely be guided by Article 146. We know that a petition is first sent to the president alleging stated misbehavior, incompetence or incapacity. The president then forwards the petition to the Chief Justice without assessing the merit. And this is where it may be a bit different from that of when it is the Chief Justice, when the same process has been triggered. In that case, the President is supposed to do that in consultation with the Council of State. Then it goes on from there. When the President sends this to the Chief Justice, the Chief Justice conducts a prima facie assessment. Now, if a prima facie case is established, then the Chief Justice constitutes a five-member committee, three superior court judges and two persons with relevant expertise. Again, it goes on that the committee investigates, gives the EC chair a stance to defend themselves, and then submits a binding recommendation to the President. Then the President must act in accordance with the committee's recommendations. Pell.
And these processes you have just mentioned, are they any different from that of the special prosecutor?
Well, effectively, they are not so much different. Again, if you look at this, also comes under the same process, Article 146 of the Constitution, just as the EC chairs and also some judges of some level. We know that, again, a petition is submitted to the President. The President refers the petition to the Chief Justice. Then the Chief Justice, again, goes through the same process of a prima facie case. If he finds proper grounds for them to escalate it, then is when he sets up a committee that again will come up with findings that again are binding on the actors of the report. Pell.
Now let's talk about details of one of the petitions for the removal of the special prosecutor. Who are these petitioners and what are the reasons they are given for the removal of the special prosecutor?
So, Pell, the petition that I have in particular is the one that has been filed by Apostle Abraham Lincoln Labby and two others, Roland Paddy and Philip Sapia. They give five major reasons they think that the OSP, or not the OSP, the SP, the special prosecutor should not continue to stay in office. They talk about Ken Ofiarte's issue, that allowing him to leave, they the thought country. That was a bad faith. That the petitioners say the special prosecutor showed bad faith during the exit of former finance minister Ken Ofiarte. They quote Kisi Jabin's own interview with KSM where he said, "Well, we saw him leave." And now, to the petitioners, this is proof that the OSP knew Ofiarte was leaving the country but kept quiet. They also say that Kisi justified his silence by suggesting it was difficult to act because the president at the time was Ofiarte's cousin. They summarized this as the SP claiming it was difficult for him as an SP to block Mr. Ken Ofiarte's exit. But the petitioners don't accept his reasoning. Okay. They argue that if the special prosecutor can act whenever a suspect is connected to someone in power, then he, quote, will automatically go silent and allow the suspect to go scot-free. There's also some other reasons. Well, he's not cooperating with the Attorney General in the case of the docket for the extradition of Ken Ofiarte.
We heard a lot of that.
Exactly.
The
they quote what Justice Ramsay had said earlier, that they had written severally to the SP to give them the docket for the extradition, and that there wasn't cooperation between the two of them. They go ahead to talk about the conflict of interest, that he tried to investigate allegations against himself as the SP leading the office of the special prosecutor in the case of Martin Kpebu and some of the allegations he had made about their office. And then again, they also mentioned abuse of office, that they have had some allegations of some staff being used as domestic workers. So these are some of the allegations for what these petitions, three of them, think that the SP Kisi Jabin should not continue to lead the office of the special prosecutor.
Did you say some staff being used as domestic workers?
Well, so that is exactly some of the allegations that they are making. Okay. They, even in their own petition, said that it may need some more investigations, independent investigations to unravel what that really means in that particular one. So if you look at the main petition, it's almost a full page and a half on that particular section. Section 4, where they talk about abuse of office by Kisi Ejabin.
Michael Ashali, thank you. So we know that the petitions have been forwarded to the Chief Justice. This was confirmed by government spokesperson Felix Kwachifusu earlier today. Listen. If the President has received as much as 10 separate petitions, and when were they forwarded to the Chief Justice?
Well, I can confirm to you that the President has indeed received the referenced petitions in respect of the Electoral Commissioner and her deputies, and then the Special Prosecutor.
Are you able to tell us when they were forwarded to the Chief Justice?
Well, this happened sometime last week.
And also, is this on the advice of the Council of State?
Well, every process that needed to be honored has been undertaken. And the process for doing so is quite clear. So I heard your resource person in the studio take you through the process. And that is precisely what the President has followed.
that is what I can say for now.
Finally, when is the Chief Justice expected to return to the President on the determination of this case or otherwise?
Again, at this stage, the process has left the hands of the President. Beyond conveying the petitions to the Chief Justice for the processes to continue, there's little else that the President does in this particular instance. So everything now rests with the Chief Justice, who I believe will act in accordance with Ghanaian law.
So, Kenneth, you had Felix Kwachi, who's a government spokesperson, speaking to us on the midday news this afternoon.
Pearl, thankfully, we have one of the petitioners who want the OSP gone. Abraham Lincoln Labi is joining us on the telephone lines right now. Glad you could join us this evening. What are your reasons for petitioning for the removal of the OSP?
Good evening to you all and your listening. My petition, for one, is for demonstrating back film. That is, where you saw the person going and you refused to make any attempt. And you said that you made attempt of reaching out to the other agency. Now, to me, you all two people are living. You're from door. And also the citizen. If really you made an attempt, why don't you hold the press conference and tell Ghanaians that you can go in. It has a corruption related issue, but the powers that be are prospecting me not to. Tell me one extent. You kept all these things raw. It just can't show that you reveal the thing. You demonstrated about it, and we have for the ultimate good faith. In fact, it's between me and you, not be faithful to me. It is not, you see, it is our time, citizens, with one old politician or people in office, highly accountable.
Abraham, now the petition has been forwarded to the Chief Justice. What are your expectations?
Oh, I'm expecting that, with the prima facie case, whatever, it's fake zero. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Something that we should be removed, and also the office to reform local office center, all the skills, CID office, whatever the boss to be strengthened, so that we have a place for investigation.
And are there any special things that you are seeking from the office, in particular the office of the special prosecutor? Because you cited Kisiye Jabin for being inactive. Is there anything specific that you want the special prosecutor, his office, to do?
My mother, you see, the whole thing, I have an issue with the OSP itself. Why it should be formed? Because when you look at the whole thing, it's about duplication of duty. What is doing, Yoko is doing. All the bureaus, they are doing it. So what is the essence of establishing OSP? But to my understanding, somebody explained to me that where is a division of labor. And even this morning, I got information that 249 workers are there. So I said, okay, then it should be reformed. But as for Kisi Ejabin, it should be sacked.
Right, Abraham Lincoln Labi, thank you very much. He's one of the petitioners, one of three actually, who is seeking for Kisiye Jabin, the special prosecutor, to be dismissed. You can also join us with your thoughts and comments on the stories that we've been sharing with you so far. What do you think of what we've been telling you so far? It's now time for business. And George Wiafe has joined me in the studio with the latest. George, what have you got for us?
Well, coming up in business, the oil marketing companies justified the projected increase in fuel prices, insisting they are purely based on the city's performance and international dynamics. We'll also explore the impact on existing loans and new facilities as the Ghana reference rate is set to reduce significantly in the coming days. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business. Kingdom Books and Stationery, your number one stop shop for all your office essentials, and the Stangs and Pepsodent, Herbal, and Charcoal. Welcome back to Business on News Night. Now, oil marketing companies have justified the expected increase in fuel prices at the pumps. Now, prices of petroleum products are said to be increased by as much as 5% per litre from tomorrow morning. However, some consumers are still raising questions about the justification for this hike. Dr. Riverson Opon is chief executive of the Chamber of Oil Marketing Companies.
Master who has gone for the fixed rate, at least you are betting against all odds. So basically,
national prices for petrol and diesel. Petrol rose by 1.26% and diesel by 2.28% in the market. So crude oil prices went down 4%, but obviously the demand for the end products are high at this particular time of the year, as expected. So that is what is driving the number depreciating by 1% from 10.94 to 11.14 over the window that is being expired right now. It tells you that, yes, there's a continuous depreciation that we should expect even during this window. And that's also affecting the prices that we have. So indirectly, we are saying that we should expect between 2% increase in petrol, and then an average of 3% increase in diesel at the moment, because of these two factors that I've enlightened. That is, i.e., the international benchmark prices for petrol and diesel going up, and also CD depreciating by 1.76%.
Dr. Riverson Opon is chief executive for the Chamber of Oil Marketing Companies. Now, commercial banks will from this Wednesday review downwards their key benchmark used in determining interest rates, that is the Ghana reference rate. But what will be the impact of this development on new loans and those new facilities that are yet to be actually serviced, or also new ones that they are currently being serviced? Lauren Saki is head of research of the Ghana Association of Banks.
Your master who has gone for the fixed rate, at least you are betting against all odds. So basically, once you sign up for a fixed rate, irrespective of whether the rate are dropping, you will see that effect in your amortization schedule. So, but there are instances where even though you'll be having fixed payment and all that, people can go back to the banks and then probably renegotiate and all that, because the people are there, they are human beings. And maybe there's that likelihood that maybe they may reconsider their position and all that. But once it's fixed, I think the position is you're supposed to make that fixed payment throughout, irrespective of whether interest rate is dropping or not. There's no way to affect your repayment rate. Concerning the other person who will go for variable, I think they will see the real benefit, because the computation varies as per changes in the GRR. So once the rates are dropping, your repayment rates will also drop. And if it's increasing, I think we should expect similar increase in what the repayment. The same principle apply in FX as well.
And that is Lawrence Saki. He is head of research at the Ghana Association of Banks, explaining how the review in the Ghana reference rate will affect existing loans as well as new facilities. Now, businesses have described as prudent decision by the Bank of Ghana to cut its key lending rate to commercial banks. The central bank last week cut the policy rate by some 3.5%. Magbedu Abuaji is chief executive of the Ghana National Chamber of Commerce and Industry.
Well, obviously, it didn't come as a surprise to me, because looking at the dynamics and the environment, we had predicted at least 3.5%. So that was our minimum. Just scan around the variables. Inflation, I mean, it's gone down. The disinflation process that we started has been very positive. It's gone down significantly. As you said, now we are doing 8%. And then we are hoping, I mean, from projections, we will do about 6%. If you look at the difference between inflation and the then 21.5%, it was about 13% for the real interest rate, which was very high. And that is supposed to even drive investment, drive people bringing money. That money was not coming. Secondly, if you look at even now, the 8% and the 18%, you have a real interest rate of about 10%, which is still very high. At that time that the policy rate was 21.5%, we were told that banks were given facility below the policy rate, which of course shouldn't happen.
Mark Bedua Bwaji is chief executive of the Ghana National Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Now, Happy Sunshine Company has officially launched its latest addition to the Ghanaian food market, Lavan's Pepper Sauce Shuto. Acting chief executive, that is Patrick Amwakumensa, said the new product stays through to the original taste of its tradition.
Happy Sunshine has been in our market space for almost 12 years. With the success story of Lavon's tomato mix, Hondi tomato mix, Tam Tam tomato mix, we thought it needful that Shito being our daily necessity, especially when it comes to our schools, we went to the boardroom and thought of bringing something very authentic. With this, we all know it's just like Mama made it, just like whatever we do in our household. It's pure, natural, and authentic. We have shrimps, that is protein. We have fish. We have natural chili pepper, and these are all essential ingredients that is helpful for the body.
Acting chief executive of the Happy Sunshine Company, Patrick Amwakumensa. And that's all for business on Newsnight. Back to you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for bringing us the latest in business. It's now time for sports, and Daniel is here.
Yeah, Midiama Sporting Club, they missed their chance to extend their lead at the top of the Ghana Premier League table with a 2-2 draw against Asante Kotoko at the Babayaro Sports Stadium yesterday. Midiama took a 2-0 lead, but Kotoko scored very late in the game to clinch the draw. But Midiama head coach Ibrahim Tanko says his side remain focused on their quest to win the Premier League title this season.
Like I said, normally before the game, if you ask me to share 1 point, I would say yes. But looking at how the game went, definitely we deserve the 3 points. But that's how football is. No, I think, and I said it even before the season, that we are ready. So this is the 12 week games, and we still have enough game to play. So we are going to watch the video and then correct our mistakes and then try to get the 3 points at home next week.
You heard Midiama Sporting Club head coach Ibrahim Tanko speaking there. Now, Ghana's senior women's national team, the Black Queens, are in England ahead of their friendly against the European champions on Friday. The high-profile friendly is to aid the team's preparations ahead of their final WAFCON qualifier next year. The Queens finished third in this year's WAFCON in what was their first appearance since 2018. That's all for sports. Back to you guys.
Thank you, Daniel.
And let's go to the central region, because Ghana risks losing the full value of its first lithium venture if delays in ratifying the mining lease continue to stall the Ewoyaa project. Acting director of the Institute of Mineral Resource Investment and Governance at the University of Mines and Technology, Dr. Frank Boateng, is warning government revenues will keep shrinking if the deal is not passed. When the mining lease was signed in October 2023, the global price of lithium was about $3,000 per ton. Today, it has plunged to around $600. Dr. Boateng says Ghana must urgently build price sensitivity mechanisms into agreement to cushion future market shocks. We'll hear from him shortly.
But first, two communities, though, Ewoyaa and Krampakrum, earmarked for relocation to a 180-unit modern housing project, say their future remains frozen as the resettlement exists only on paper. Emmanuel Givenu has more in this week's episode of Hope on Pause, The Lithium Promise.
Abba Yamiati cooks on the clay stove in the middle of her compound, something she has done for years. 2 years ago, officials came and measured everything she owned, her rooms, farmlands, and placed a moratorium on all new developments in Krampakrum.
They came to demarcate our buildings and told us we would be relocated. They measured our rooms, the land, and took inventory of everything. And afterward, gave us photocopies of the validation form. The same process was carried out on our farmlands as well.
Abba fears any new development she undertakes could be destroyed or excluded from compensation.
The delay is a major worry. The stop work order means any new development won't be counted for compensation. They may even pull it down because the order is already in place.
Because we can't just stop work, no, I do pay.
di
Ewoya is one of the communities earmarked for resettlement. Richard Manson sits with his wife and children in front of the single room that all six of them share. A weak aging structure meant to be temporary. Richard has saved for years to build additional rooms, but the moratorium placed on new buildings halted his plans, and the building materials have been wasting away.
Trying to complete this room so we could move into it. We even used some of the roofing sheet to put up a small pen for our livestock.
Iweye's queen mother says the uncertainty has paralyzed the entire community. No one is building, no one is improving their farms, and key services the project promised, including a new school, remain on paper.
Honestly, we have been waiting for the relocation, but nothing has happened. I've had to stop building, and I cannot expand my farm. It's very worrying. We are pleading with the government to ratify the mining project so we can move forward.
At Ewoye's improvised community school, teacher Esther says children here can only attend school up to class 3. After that, they walk several kilometers in their quest to quench the academic thirst.
Because of this walking, the performance of the students here are very poor. It's very poor because, you see, they are tired. They walk this long distance journey to school and come back. When they come, they go to bush. So they don't get time to learn and study. So their performance is very low. But if they've gotten the infrastructure here, they are being taught here, they close maybe 2:30 or 3, they have enough rest, do their homeworks and do reading, their performance will be up.
Meanwhile, the resettlement plan meant to move Ewoya and Krampa Krom into a modern community has been fully designed and approved, but cannot begin. The new township covers 29.5 hectares with 180 housing plots, a preschool, a market and a commercial center, a health facility zone, a sports field, a chief's palace and place of worship, light industrial area, surfaced and unsurfaced internal roads.
We were taken to the new site where we will be relocated, and we have seen everything there.
This is what residents were shown. This was what they were prepared for. But the entire plan depends on Parliament ratifying the mining lease.
We took advantage of, at the time, the high lithium prices of 3,000 to, for example, move beyond the...
For residents like Abba, these national debates feel distant. What she leaves every day is the paralysis.
If the lithium mining is truly going to happen, they should hurry up. Once we are relocated, we can start rebuilding our lives.
2 years after being told not to cultivate new farmlands, not to build, and not to improve their homes, the people of Ewoya and Krampa Krom remain stuck between relocation and reality. A modern township has been designed for them, but they cannot see it. Their current communities cannot progress. And until Parliament makes a decision on the Ewoya lithium project, their lives remain paused. Emmanuel Jivenu, Joy News, Central Region.
Let's now listen to Dr. Frank Boateng, who's calling for the urgent ratification of the Ewoya lithium deal.
The more we sit down and wait, we are losing out on the market. We are losing out on, cashing out from these minerals. So it's very crucial that we don't let this turn into another debate where there will be a standoff and we are not going to close this deal. I feel there are certain things we can look at. I mean, price sensitivities can be plugged in. If tomorrow prices change, we can come back to the table and look at the royalty deals as well.
And let's bring you more stories tonight, because in the heart of Buankron, an ancient mango tree has become the most important teacher and the most fragile classroom. Its branches offer shade but no shelter from a harsh reality. This community's only school is collapsing. For nearly 200 young children, their first lessons in life and learning are happening not within the safe walls of a classroom, but under this tree as their actual school building crumbles just feet away, a silent symbol of years of neglect and broken promises. Anas Sabit has more in the following report.
This ancient mango tree, a symbol of life and abundance in Buankron, has become an unlikely hero. But it's a hero born of desperation. This right here, KG1 through to primary 3, nearly the entire lower primary structure, hold their lessons right here, day in, day out. Why? Because this dilapidated two-unit block built by the community several years back is dying. Years of rain damage, neglect, and frustrated pleas have left it structurally unsound, too dangerous to enter. Nana Omo Asamoah Chibafo is the Odi crew of this community. When the rains come, and they will, learning doesn't just stop here. It becomes perilous. Inside is a no-go zone. Outside, under the tree, is a battle against elements. Sudden downpours, scorching sun, dust, and distractions no child should face daily. Fred Esiama is the assistant headmaster here.
Our infrastructure, the buildings, and the environment, it is not all that good for teaching.
Well, the Republic Bank Lavatham Habitats Fair in the Ashanti region ended over the weekend, with patrons and exhibitors anticipating more. My colleague Emmanuel Bright Kweku captured all the moments.
For Don Master, we are looking for people that are building, starting to build, finishing, and those are the people that came. Anybody that visited our stand, I mean, when we asked them, they had the project ongoing.
It has been very much organized, and then we are able to speak to patrons of our products.
I'm actually surprised and I'm overwhelmed by the turnout. Because even in the rain, we still had people at the tent. With the two developers that came around, I am sure that we've had a number of people purchase or made some commitments to purchasing those houses.
Oh, the fair was very nice. Even unfortunately, I came today. Yes, we finished the building, so I needed the door and the kitchen cabinets and all. When you just come, you find everything at once to one place.
And those were excited patrons at the Love FM Habitat Fair. That's how we end Newsnight tonight. But before we go, though, a few of your messages that you've been sending to us. This one is from Augustus from Adoteiman. He says, if those who wrote in September are failing like this, I cry for my daughter who is writing in May. Charles also says, the very day I finished the exams and I picked my daughter finished the exams and I picked her from school, the only thing she told me was that the teachers were even surprised about the math, and truly she failed the math. This one says, frankly, wording of questions in both BEC and WASC is problematic. Very lengthy sentences before choosing correct answer in the objective test. And this is God's Way from Lakeside Estate. He says, the catastrophic failure of students in the recent WASC is a deafening alarm bell for our nation as far as education is concerned. It's obvious that those students spent their time on social media instead of reading their books. This is a matter of concern and must be digested by the Ministry of Education. So those are some of the messages that you've been sending to us on our WhatsApp platform. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Kenneth Jesse.
I am Pearl Ofori.
Have a good evening.